2 Kings chapter 17. And I want us to go through these 23 verses we read there, particularly as they set before us the theme, the very last phrase we can take out of verse 23 itself. So was Israel carried away out of their own land to Assyria unto this day. There's a simple historical record there for us, and there are lessons that I want us to derive from them for ourselves out of the experience of Israel at this time. We've been on a long journey. We've journeyed and travelled from 931 to 722. We've come through 210 years. We've covered it in 7 months since November last year. We've taken 16 studies, different times, to get where we are. We're almost at the end. We're in the final lap. And here we are tonight. And one of the commentators has given a most apposite way of looking at chapter 17 of the history of Israel as a nation and a people. Here, we have an autopsy being performed. Here, we have an autopsy. Here, we have a diagnosis being made of the membrane. I'm not going to say life, but the membrane of a nation. Here you have the writer reviewing the evidence, and eventually the writer comes to a conclusion. Death by suicide. That's the conclusion the autopsy comes to. Suicide, it's deemed and it's put down as a self-inflicted wound. That is what suicide is called, a self-inflicted wound. That's what happened here. Death by suicide, a self-inflicted wound. They were perverse in their disobedience. They were defiant in their opposition to the Lord. They didn't die. They didn't die because of the Assyrian invasion. Oh no. They were already dead before the nation arrived. It wasn't the Assyrians that killed them. It was themselves. Through their own action. Through their own living. Through their own perverse behavior. All the Assyrians did was they simply arrived to perform the formalities. To tidy up the mess. To clear the nation from the land. We have here the death of a kingdom. The autopsy is to be performed. And if we keep that figure before our minds, the first thing that we look at for is then, what's the time of death? What is the time of death? Here we have it. When Hoshea, son, the king, began to reign in Samaria over Israel for 9 years. The last king in that dynasty that started with Jeroboam, son of Nebat. And even in that little time marker, the time of death that we're calling it, even there is an amazing lesson for ourselves. A simple lesson about the distortion that sin has in people's lives. How do you get that out of this? Well, just think for a moment of where we are. Here is Israel. It's lost its past glory as a nation. All that's left is but the dust and remnants of memories. Israel, its borders have been clipped. Their borders are narrow and straightened, and they are only a rump of what they once were. Israel, the light in the nation is flickering. And it's about to go out, and darkness is about to drop on the people. That's the situation we're in here in chapter 17. And yet in that kind of circumstance, we have a man who has aspirations for great things. I want to be king over a crumbling nation and over a besieged city and over a people going into exile. What a distortion sin puts upon people's thinking. Here we have a man who's got aspirations for great things, little aware that everything is going to crumble in his hands within 8-9 years. Little aware of the condemnation he's brought upon his own soul, because it was through the shedding of blood that he got where he was. Assassination was the name of the game of inheritance through all of these generations we've been looking at in the history of kings in Israel. Here he is, no different, bringing it upon himself. But what's he getting through such a fearful condemnation upon his soul? He's getting a kingdom that is falling apart. A man with aspirations for great things, yet he ends up in prison. Sees a city besieged, and he sees his people deported. Who would want that on their CV? Who would want that written against them and noised abroad about them? Here we have a nation underneath the judgment of God. Here we have a nation, a king. What was he doing? He was depending on Assyria. He was depending on Assyria to survive and to rule. Against him came up Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, and Hoshea became his servant and gave him presents. He was a vassal. He was a lackey to Assyria. That's what he was, the distortion of sin in this king's heart and life. And yet, it's worse than that. He makes a fatal mistake. He bit the hand that fed him. Yes, we are told he turned away from Assyria. Aspirations, hope in our own hearts, well, surely he's turned it to the Lord. No, he didn't turn to the Lord. He turned to Saul, the king of Egypt. He made the wrong guess. He had the wrong call on the things in the political sphere at that time. He thought, well, if I go and ingratiate myself to Egypt, then with Egypt's strength and with Egypt's ability and with Egypt's commitment, maybe they will deliver me from the rule and the iron fist of the Assyrians. He made a wrong call. He made a wrong call, and Assyria said, enough is enough, Hoshea. I've seen the deceit that's in you. And that deceit brought full-scale retaliation and retribution against Hoshea and the nation and the people. And it provoked this last death throw, the time of death for the people, the king, and the city. And so he was put in prison, and the city was besieged for 3 years. The time of death. And if I can just hold on to that image just for one last figure. Verse 2. He did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, to be sure, yes. But not as the kings of Israel that were before him. I'm sure that many of us, I've seen it several times myself, I'm sure that we can all look back to somebody who was dying. And they're slowly going down. You're there watching it, helpless. And then just in a moment, you see them rally. And you see them coming up, and they're bright just for a moment. And that, oh, that breeds hope in your heart. But it's that last final rally. And it's only a little one before they go down for the last time. That's what we see in verse 2. Here is a king, and he's not just as bad as all the ones that are before him. There's a little rally, It's only a little rally before the final lap and the Assyrians arrive. The time of death. This king, who had aspirations for great things, a handful of dust and a deported people. So that's the time of death. If we keep hold of that still, we're in an autopsy situation. The next thing you find in the death certificate is the cause of death. What was it that brought about this nation to be where they are now? There are here in the verses we've read at least three main themes and thrusts and features of history and the life of the nation over the last 210 or 200 years. And these are true for them that day, but they also stand true for us in our day. They are warnings for us today. We can look at these three features from two very contrasting different directions. We can look at these same features, first of all, as it were, the behavior of Israel. Or we can handle the same material and look at it from the blessings of God. Let's focus on the last one. Let's read the history here in the light of the blessings of God. First thing we see here is the ingratitude of the people. Verse 7 sets the tone for the first thing. For so it was that the children of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God. And what's the first thing we're told? God who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. From under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. There you have it, the tone set right at the beginning, God's goodness to them. And in the verses that follow from 7 through to 12, you have a lot of ground covered. You have years covered, going back to 931 and perhaps a little before. You have such a variety of experiences covered, way back. Going back to the days of Egypt. Here you have the Lord reciting his goodness to his people. And we start with the deliverance from Egypt. And what happened next? What is it that happened next? We are told here. They went after other gods. They imitated, walked, verse 8 tells us, they imitated the heathen nations. They walked in the statutes of the heathen. Verse 9, the children of Israel did secretly those things that were not right against the Lord. They were perverse in their secrecy. Then, as we explained, the way in which they built these places of worship, these idol places, from every place they went to under a tree beside a watchtower in the cities, everywhere they went, the land was strewn. The land was littered with these idols and these false worships of Baal. Extensive in their rebellion. Deaf to the warnings of nations. The Lord had done things against other nations, other peoples. But they didn't hear it. They didn't listen. And they walked in the statutes of the nation, of the heathen, whom the Lord had cast out from before the children of Israel, and of the kings of Israel, which they had made. God had done so much for them. And this is the way they were paying him back. Sheer ingratitude to them. Deuteronomy chapter 7. I think. Is it chapter 7? This is the Lord speaking to the people when they were going to go into the land setting down a line in the sand that they were to behave in this way. When the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest, and when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show any mercy to them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughters thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. For they will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So will the anger of the Lord be kindled against you and destroy thee suddenly. Hold on to that. The anger of the Lord destroying suddenly. That's the line that the Lord drew in the sand for the behavior of his people. And now, for these last 200 years, they've stepped across that line. They've wanted to be like other nations. They don't want to be different. We see it way back in our studies when there was a desire, we want a king. We want a king to be like other nations. They didn't like to be different. Even Solomon, for all that is said in his honor and praise, positive qualities about him, even Solomon gave in to this sin, gave in to what his wives and his women said, and set up places of worship for Baal and such like. It's a danger that still lurks in the heart of men and of us. There are times when this, we don't want to be different. It's well covered. We don't want to be different. It's well hidden. But it can be identified. It can be seen so easily in us, simply like this. Whenever the Lord is denied his priority, whenever the Lord is denied our commitment to him, whenever the Lord is denied a delight from our souls, then something has taken his place in our lives. We don't want to be different. And there, we're the same as Israel. It's hard to be different. Hard to be different even today. We know how hard it is for other people in other nations where their life can be laid on the line. Yes, it's hard to be different there. But it's hard in different ways to be different here. We have thrown at us constantly an explanation of where we've come from based upon evolution. It's hard to be different to say, no, I don't believe that. I believe this. It's hard to be different when the standards of morality or immorality that go on round about us are given normalcy. They're accepted, they're reckoned to be proper and acceptable, and we say, no, I don't want that immorality, I'll go by this book. And so it goes on down the line. Things that challenge us and the way we are different because of our Christian stance, and we say, no, I don't want that, I'm going to believe this. That sometimes can be very hard simply to say we're different. Yet different we are. And the only way that we can be strengthened to stand for the Lord and to be different is to be filled with the Lord. Only when we have that daily experience of his grace, only there and then will we have the power able to keep us against the sin that is identified here. Only then, with a daily experience of his grace, will there be promoted gratitude. And that gratitude so often is the rock on which we stand and the power that keeps us going. Customs, traditions, rules, regulations, all of these will be overwhelmed. Only grace will keep us walking in the way. The first cause of death identified in the autopsy, ingratitude against God's gracious dealings with them. Secondly, what happened? Verse 13, yet the Lord testified against Israel and against Judah by all the prophets and by all the seers, saying, turn ye from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes according to all the law which I command you. Notwithstanding, they would not hear. If the first fault was ingratitude and cause of death, the second cause of death is deafness. Deafness. There was so much noise, as there is so much noise in our lives. There's so much going on. They had no time to listen to what God was saying to them. So many competing voices crying out and shouting out in their ears, wanting an entry into their lives. Deafness. Oh yes, they were going down the road of sin. We've seen that with all of our studies over the last 18 studies. But God didn't leave them comfortable in their sin. God didn't leave them where they were brought by their own behavior. Warnings were given. Here we're told about the way in which he sent repetitively prophets, seers, warnings, constantly speaking to them. Elijah, Elisha, Amos. That's why we wanted to look at Hosea for the last 2 weeks before we come here, because he's part of this process. God was speaking to them through all these years, but they were not listening. One vital element we've highlighted in the studies in Hosea, one vital element of that message that came time and again to them was the warning of where they were and the need to repent. These were the warnings that were in the message of Hosea, especially as we saw it last 2 weeks. But that wasn't exclusively what the message was about. Yes, there was the warning, but there was also a balance. There was also the glorious prospect of blessings from God. We saw that in right at the very beginning, Hosea chapter 1 and verse 10, the way in which the Lord sets out the glorious prospect. If my people will obey me, then this is what is in store for you. But they were deaf. They were deaf to all of these overtures and all of these voices. The logic of the first thought that we had there of ingratitude, verses 7 through to 12, the logic of the way they behaved against God, the logic of that would dictate the expectation of judgment. But no. For a moment, grace intervenes. Grace intervenes, and we have in this second section where there's a recitation of the history of the people once again, there's a second list made up of what's wrong in Israel. But the pile just gets bigger with the same quality about it. The defects in the nation. They were time and again getting God's servants speaking to them. Time and again God was sending his messengers. And yet what were they doing? They rejected his statutes, his covenant, his testimonies. They followed vanities. They became vain. And so it goes on in verses 15 through to 17. We have an echo of what we saw already in Hosea. Remember the way in which Hosea brings out the way in which there was a vanity about them. The word particularly means there was an emptiness. Here is the same thought brought out in verse 15. And they followed vanity, and they became vain. If you want to go after the Assyrians, then to the Assyrians you will go. You become like where you are. If you went after something that's worthless, then worthless is what you're going to be. If you let a flock of goats, well, female goats anyway, if you let goats into your garden, and the strawberries are in flush, and they eat the strawberries, then it's not long afterwards when you milk the goat that you get the taste of the strawberries from the milk. The milk is like what they're eating. That's what is happening to God's people here. They were like what they wanted. They sold themselves. They deliberately went down a certain path. But as they did it, they went down it with their fingers in their ears and their hearts wrapped up in the joys of a moment without a second thought towards God. What he had done for them, what he had made them to be, what he had prepared for those who obey him. And this thought, again, it's not limited to Old Testament. We sometimes can listen to these things that are said to us and we can think that we've got the safe perspective of distance between us and them. We think that, well, that's there and it's long ago and I'm safe. No, we're not safe. Go to Hebrews chapter 12. Let me just read it. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 25. See that ye refuse not him that speaketh. For if they escape not, who refused him that spake on earth, much more shall not we escape, if we turn away from him that speaketh from heaven. Or again, earlier on in this same book of Hebrews, chapter 4 this time, let us therefore fear lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached as well as unto them. There we have it. No defense. No defense from distance. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. For we which have believed do enter into rest, as he said, I have sworn in my wrath that they shall enter into my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. Listening to what God is saying, it's a responsibility that's upon us all. And all the more so when you think of the fullness, the clarity of God's revelation in the New Testament in contrast to the Old. The cause of death, ingratitude, deafness. Thirdly, lastly, what do we find? We find judgment coming upon the nation. Cause of death, the judgment of God. But we've got to go down to verse 18 before it. We read it. Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel. Perhaps this element of anger and retribution from God, we were expecting it to break in a lot sooner in this chapter. Maybe we were expecting it to come after verse 7 or 8 or 9, where there's the history of God's dealings with the people and the ingratitude of the people in the face of that blessing. We're delayed. It's delayed. It's held off until we get to verse 18. There we have the Lord's intimation of his anger. But this isn't the only place it's heard of. It's not as if it suddenly comes up here. Notice what it says in verse 23. Until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight, as he had said by all his servants the prophets. Remember what we read there in Deuteronomy 7. Go again this time to Deuteronomy chapter 11 for a similar theme and thought. Deuteronomy 11 and verse 16. Take heed that your heart be not deceived and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. And then the Lord's wrath be kindled against thee, and he shut the heaven that there be no rain, and the land yield not a fruit, and lest ye perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord giveth you. But again, same book chapter, Deuteronomy chapter 28 this time. There we read verse 36. The Lord shall bring thee, and thy king which thou shalt set over thee, unto a nation which neither thou nor thy fathers have known, and there shalt thou serve other gods, woods and stone. And thou shalt become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all nations whither the Lord shall lead thee. Thou shalt carry much seed out into the field and shall gather but little in, for the locust shall consume it. Thou shalt plant vineyards and dress them, but shalt neither drink of the wine nor gather the grapes, for the worm shall eat them. Thou shalt have olive trees throughout all thy coasts, but thou shalt not anoint thyself with oil, for thine olive shall cast a fruit. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them, for they shall go into captivity. The progressive judgment of God set out for the people, culminating in this judgment of deportation because of what they had done. God's word had been going to them through the years, but they weren't listening. But that doesn't mean to say that God won't act. Doesn't mean that God's word is false. Doesn't mean that it's an empty threat. He's been speaking for over 200 years. And now, it's going to happen. Can you imagine the surprise in the nation of Israel? Can you imagine the gossip that would have been going around the marketplace from the castle and the palace downwards? Can you imagine what they would have been saying? They thought, this is never really going to happen. This isn't really going to come upon us. But here it was. Judgment from God. Complacency is a danger to them, and it's a danger to us. And it's a danger that applies not only to Israel, but even out of this we see it applying to Judah. Go to verse 18. Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah alone. And if you pause there, you can almost imagine Judah taking a little step forward and patting themselves on the back and saying, well, that's what's happened to Israel. It's not going to happen to us. We're good. We're good. But then you go to verse 19. Also, Judah kept not the commandments of the Lord their God, but walked in the statutes of Israel, which they made. There is the bubble burst of their hopes. What God is saying to Judah is clear. He's saying to Judah, you're next. Don't let the complacency of Israel lull you into a false sense that things are comfortable and good for you. It'll be 100 years before it happens, but it's going to happen to you if you go down the same road as these people of Israel. If you don't listen up, this is going to happen to you too. There is a sideways swipe at them, just the same as there's a sideways application for us. Something has happened to another church. Something has happened to another denomination, congregation. Something has happened to another Christian believer. What the Lord is saying is, that is possible for you too. Don't think that you have a protection against these things happening. Especially if complacency takes root among you. Judgment upon Israel and the swipe sideways for Judah. Now it's going to be fulfilled. And yet again, even with the recitation here, we're right back to the beginning. The Lord has gone back to the beginnings three times. Well, this is the third time. Verse 22 this time. Where does he go this time? He goes back to the beginning of the nation, 931, when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, became king. And he is saying that from that day onwards, the mold, the tone, the attitude was set. This is the way the die was cast as a nation. And you've been the same ever since then. Not one of you have broken ranks. What goes around comes around. Whatever the cliche is, you reap what you sow. And that's what the Lord is saying here. Verses 18, 20, 22. Time and again, the Lord was angry. Verse 20, the Lord rejected all the seed of Israel. Verse 22, the last phrase, they departed not from them until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight. He will fulfill what he has said in blessing and in judgment. And this deportation that we've got here, it's more than just simply a geographic displacement. It's more than just simply out of Israel into Assyria. There is a spiritual significance upon this geographic displacement. Think of the Garden of Eden. If you want to put it in geographic terms, they were in the garden and then they were out of the garden. Is that all it was? There was spiritual significance to what had happened there. And that same spiritual significance applies here. Not just simply out of the garden. Not just simply out of Israel. But out of fellowship with God. That is the judgment that was going to come on that nation. The time of death, the cause of death, ingratitude, deafness, judgment from God. And yet one last thought before we close. This book of Kings, it was written for those who were in exile. It was written to the people who were in Assyria. And they were reading their own history because they were part of it, but they were reading it now with a spiritual interpretation upon it. The correction was having its effect upon them. They had been in exile now for some time. They had learned through hardship and suffering spiritual lessons. They knew God's fearful judgment upon them. They knew why they were where they were, what they had done to provoke the Lord. And yet the Lord had said to them, there was a promise. Chapter 30 of Deuteronomy, first 3 verses. And it shall come to pass, when all these things have come upon you. Chapter 29 has been talking about the judgment and the anger of the Lord against the land and the way in which he's going to bring them into exile, the way he's going to judge them. And now we're coming to the conclusion or the application. Chapter 31. In verse 1, it shall come to pass when all these things have come upon you, the blessing and the curse, which I have set before thee, and thou shalt call them to mind among all the nations whither the Lord thy God has driven you, and shalt return unto the Lord thy God, and shalt obey his voice according to all that I command thee this day, thou and thy children, with all thine heart and with all thy soul, that then the Lord thy God will turn thy captivity and have compassion upon thee and will return and gather thee from all the nations whither the Lord thy God hath scattered thee. There is, yes, the fulfillment of the word of the Lord in judgment upon the people. And they knew it. And they knew that the Lord fulfilled it. Well, they can now hold on to Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 1. If the Lord brought these judgments upon us and brought us into Assyria, if we truly repent, if we come through these experiences casting ourselves upon God's mercy, there we have a promise to encourage us. A promise of restoration. A promise of blessing. A promise of liberality from God's hand. The two things hold together, God's threat and the promise concerning it. God's blessing, equally a promise concerning it. Both of them true. Both of them to be fulfilled. And these people knew exactly what the Lord had done against them. And so they held on to what the Lord had said that he would yet do for them. The death of a nation, time of death, the cause of death, ingratitude, deafness, judgment, and the lessons for ourselves.